Stop the violence. Stop the killing. Start building peace. That was the appeal launched by American and European church leaders at the end of their six-day visit to the Holy Land this week in support of the Christian churches there, a visit I was able to join them on for the third year in a row. The concluding message this year was more dramatic and more urgent than ever before, largely because the death toll in the bombing of the Gaza Strip climbed to over 1,000 during our visit. And everywhere we went, the bishops heard stories of suffering and fear compounded by the Gaza conflict.
Faith gives us hope that justice, peace and forgiveness are possible. A conviction shared by our host, His Beatitude Juan XII, and the Assembly of Catholic Ordinaries of the Holy Land.
Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool heads the Holy Land Coordination Group, which aims to promote prayer, pilgrimages, political pressure and practical projects to support peace and development of the Church throughout the region. At the end of the meeting on Thursday, I asked him more about the concluding appeal from the bishops. Archbishop Kelly, you've been leading this delegation here to the Holy Land for the ninth year in a row, is that correct?
Yes, I think so, yes.
The statement, the final statement at the end of your visit here is a very strong-worded one, perhaps the strongest I've ever seen coming out of these meetings. Why is that?
Because the situation is so grave, but not only for that reason, that I've felt a growing conviction in these days that now we have to speak even more powerfully, saying it's not enough to have a ceasefire, we've got to look to the future. We have got to urge everybody who has any economic, political influence in this world of ours to say, our concern is all the children of the Holy Land. We have to address their security, all of them without exception. We have to resolve to face this and not just forget about it.
You say very clearly we're not political leaders, we're religious leaders, and yet religion and politics are impossible, it seems, to separate in this Holy Land.
Inevitably, and of course, we keep on saying in most charters I know about in the world today, we say we take seriously the religious life of every human being. Very often I think it's just words, but it's vital. If you don't talk about the religious dimension of somebody's life, you're just cutting out a whole aspect of their life. And the strange thing, or the challenge, is that the three religions that touch this land, for all of them, land matters. And that's why it becomes a particular challenge. I personally profoundly believe if we can see how we enable two peoples, three religions, to live in peace and security in this land, we'll unlock the door to almost every single significant issue facing the world today. The issue of gas. Whose is it? That's the question. It's not about pipelines. The issue of oil. Whose is it? The issue of water, whose is it? The psalms at which we prayed in these days in the Holy Land say, the Lord's is the earth and its fullness. And unless all of us get that absolutely clear, we're just sowing the seeds for conflict.
You come here again and again, you try to get this message across. The political leaders, particularly here, it seems, are not interested in this voice of religion. What else can you do?
I'm not sure they're not interested, because it is noted that if they don't like what we say, they very quickly contact us and say we don't like it. In other words, it's a bit of a backhanded compliment we say in England, but the compliment is there. In other words, they are reading what we say, they do notice what we say, they correct us if they think we've got it wrong. So in other words, we're not just talking to nobody.
Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool there. The bishop's concluding message was addressed to leaders of the countries they represent, urging them to work harder with both Israelis and Palestinians to put an end to the violence and injustice. But it was also an appeal to ordinary people in their own countries to come on pilgrimage, to become involved in the peace struggle, and to put pressure on politicians to keep this problem at the top of their agenda. Bishop Gerald Kikanis of Tucson, Arizona, is vice president of the United States Catholic Bishops' Conference. He was making his first visit to Bethlehem with the coordination group, and he told me of his impressions and hopes for a just settlement to the Israeli-Palestinian crisis.
Of course, this time everyone is preoccupied with Gaza and the terrible struggle that is going on, the number of deaths that have happened. It's something that obviously is on the minds of everyone. As these two communities, the Israelis and the Palestinians, continue to try to find a way to peace, which is, of course, everyone's hope.
We've visited Christian churches, Christian organizations. Many of the Palestinian people have talked to us about their hopes and their fears. What's really struck you most throughout this week?
Well, the deep agony that people are feeling, the concern they have for peace. They want peace. I think everyone in the area probably is preoccupied with the notion that they want to live in peace, they want to live in security. Certainly, I think what they struggle with is how to get there and whether they will ever achieve the peace that they long for.
Do you find it quite depressing at the end of the week, having heard so many stories of suffering, or what's your personal reaction to what you hear here?
Well, it's very discouraging because there's such a sense of insecurity. For the Israelis, they feel a deep sense of insecurity because of acts that happen randomly and in a way that takes human life. Palestinians, of course, feel great insecurity for their futures. They don't know if they have any future. Right now, they too are experiencing severe loss of life and terrible humanitarian situations. But even for those who aren't in Gaza, there's a sense of instability, of unsurety. When we were at Bethlehem University and talking to the young people about their futures, it's always, well, hopefully I might, maybe I will. There's never a sense of confidence that there is a good future for them.
That was even more dramatic at the refugee camp we visited, run by the United Nations, where 12,000 people are living there, just waiting, hoping, perhaps dreaming, impossibly, of going back to their own lands.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking to listen to these young people who obviously have many gifts and many dreams and hopes, and to hear their sense that maybe they will never see a time of peace, maybe they will never see a time of free access, maybe they'll never find a time when their hopes will be realized. And it was almost brought tears to my eyes listening to the young people talk about the simplicity of their dreams. I'd like to see the sea. I would love to be able to swim in a pool. I'd love to be able to have a park. I'd love to be able to somehow become a social worker or somebody who could make some impact. Probably one of the most powerful moments in that conversation with the young people was the rap song that one of the young men had written and another of the young men had sung, expressing their sense of helplessness and why the world doesn't see the suffering that they're experiencing, why there is such an inability to do something. They hear lots of words, they see lots of leaders talking, but nobody seems to do anything, and how upsetting that is to them. And how difficult it must be not to become so angry that you act out in some kind of a violent way because their sense of frustration, their sense of hopelessness is so prevalent.
On the bright side, we were there with a Catholic Relief Service-sponsored project running really some extraordinary services for those young people, helping them to channel that despair into something creative.
Well, that's another impression, of course, that you have in visiting, is to see the wonderfully good things that so many people are doing, both Palestinians, Israelis, and people from international communities. There are so many people who have a real sense of what it means to care for others, to feel their pain, to know their struggle, and are trying to do something about it. I think what's so frustrating is our leaders seem to be so unable to find a way to peace. And yet there are certainly marvelous moments of people helping one another, encouraging one another, giving opportunities for people. Just this activity center where the young people have a chance to learn theater, to learn art, to be able to share their frustrations and their concerns, their difficulties. Those are beautiful moments that give hope that sometime and somehow this is going to be resolved.
In terms of a political solution, wherever we go, we hear the United States is responsible. What is your reaction, first of all, to that?
Well, I know the United States is a powerful nation. I know that it could exercise significant influence. On the one hand, the United States can't solve everyone's problem. People have to address their own issues, and so we have to be somewhat hesitant to always step in as big brother and feel that somehow we have a solution. People have to be given, and nations have to be given, the opportunity to find their own way and to resolve their own issues. But at times, situations are so out of control and the forces are so destructive that not only the United States, but the whole international community has to find a way to address the issues. And that's what we've heard again and again on this trip, is the international community, including the United States, has to push, prod, work to resolve this situation. On their own, it's probably not going to be resolved. And I hope that President-elect Obama, when he comes into office, he is a man of dialogue. He is a man on whom people have great expectations, perhaps overwhelming expectations, but nevertheless, it's important that he understand that people are looking to him for a kind of leadership that will draw together the international community to address an issue like the Israeli-Palestine situation and encourage the leaders in those communities to find a way to peace.
You're not a political leader, you're a religious leader, but if you could sit down face to face with the new President Obama, what would you say to him about this conflict?
Well, that it is terribly complex. It will take a great deal of listening, it will take a great deal of looking, to understand how to navigate through this very complex situation. I think we have to find a way to stop blaming one another, to try to figure out who's at fault and who isn't at fault, and to open up a new and creative way to realize what are the majority of people's hopes and dreams, which is that they can live in security and can live in peace. Great leaders take symbolic acts that can unfreeze a terribly troubled situation. And I hope that President Obama and other international leaders will make bold steps to try to address this issue, because as you see the number of deaths in Gaza, as you hear the fear and the concern of Israelis for their own well-being and security, violence breeds violence, and we see that being lived out in this land, and a land that should be a symbol of peace for the world is right now a battlefield, and that's tragic, and it needs to be addressed.
As you go back home to your own diocese there, what can you do, what will you do to try and push for this political commitment?
Well, hopefully we can work through the Conference of Bishops, which has an opportunity to speak with political leaders in the United States and to help prod and encourage action. So through our advocacy and lobbying efforts in the conference, I hope that we can present to significant political leaders what are the things that we've heard, what are the things we've seen, and invite them to begin to look at this in a way that will help resolve it. In my own diocese, of course, we struggle with somewhat similar issues in the sense that we face tremendous concern around the immigration question, the loss of life of people in the desert who are trying to find a way of living that will provide for their families. We face the struggle of the wall that is being built between Arizona and Mexico and along the whole southern border of the United States, which of course communicates a message similar to the wall that is being built here. So, you know, I think our people have a sensitivity in a way to some of the challenges and issues that people face here, probably in no way comparable, but nevertheless somewhat similar. We go through checkpoints and people are stopped for papers and so on. And so I think our people have a little bit of a sensitivity to this issue, but to help them to see that it's not only our experience in Arizona, but it's even more profoundly the experience here in the Holy Land. And perhaps that will open up for them an ability to really feel the struggle that people are experiencing here, both the threat and sense of insecurity that the Israelis feel, but also the pain and hurt that the Palestinians are feeling.